Welcome back to another deep dive. Today, we are stepping right into, well, right into January 2026. And if you've been sensing a bit of a shift in the digital atmosphere, you're not imagining it.
Not at all.
For years, we've treated cybersecurity like the plumbing. It's essential, sure, but you only think about it when a pipe bursts, and you definitely leave it to the technicians.
That is the perfect analogy for the old way of thinking. You know, you pay the plumber, you ignore the pipes.
Yeah.
But the stack of research we're looking at today, specifically the New Zealand Incident Response Bulletin from this month, It suggests that model is officially dead.
Dead and buried. Because the message here isn't just buy better software, it's that cybersecurity has moved from the server room straight to the boardroom.
It is.
We're looking at a bulletin that covers a massive malware outbreak affecting, 26,000 people,
yeah.
A government inquiry that is absolutely going to keep CEOs up at night, and a very specific playbook on how to survive when, not if, things go wrong.
And that when, not if mentality is. It's just so crucial. The central theme of this whole thing is the shift from reaction to preparedness. The experts, the government, they're drawing a line in the sand. They're basically saying that being reactive isn't just risky anymore.
It's unacceptable.
It's unacceptable. It's a failure of leadership.
Okay, let's unpack that. Failure of leadership is a heavy phrase. And to really get why they're using language that strong, we have to look at the local landscape here. The biggest story has to be the Manage My Health incident.
Oh, absolutely. This is the watershed moment for governance in New Zealand this year. So Manage My Health, it's a patient portal. It holds incredibly sensitive health and personal data.
Right.
And they had a breach. Now, breaches happen. It's an unfortunate reality.
Yeah.
But what makes this case a game changer is the government's response.
Because normally you just get a press release, maybe a regulator asks a few questions, and that's it. Everyone moves on. But this time.
This time. The government commissioned a full independent review, and not just a technical review. The Minister of Health stepped in personally to say that, you know, public trust is on the line.
Okay.
But here's the bit every leader needs to hear. The review isn't just looking at the hackers. It's not just about firewall settings. It's examining the governance, the oversight of their third-party providers, and
the effectiveness of the response.
Exactly. The effectiveness. They're not just asking, how did they get in? They're asking, who was watching the shop? And how did you handle the chaos?
That feels like a massive distinction. And that kind of inquiry with the National Cybersecurity Center involved, that sets a terrifying precedent for executives, doesn't it?
It does. It means you can outsource the processing of your data. You can hire a vendor to host it all. But you absolutely cannot outsource the liability.
But I can't just say, well, we hired a cloud provider. They messed up. Blame them.
Nope. The government's looking at you saying, you hired them? How did you monitor them? What was your plan B if they failed? Your third-party provider drops the ball. The regulators are coming for your throat.
Wow. Okay. That changes everything. Now, speaking of things changing, while the executives are having that headache, regular people are dealing with something called Luma Stealer.
Sounds like a bad comic book villain, doesn't it?
It really does. But the numbers are just, they're staggering.
They are. In December 2025, so just last month, the NCSC did something they almost never do.
Yeah.
They issued a direct public alert because they detected around 26,000 devices in New Zealand were likely compromised.
26,000 devices. Let's just sit with that for a second. In a country this size, that is not a targeted attack on one company.
No, that's a dragnet. And Luma Stealer. It's not ransomware. It's not locking your screen. It's quieter. It's designed to harvest your credentials.
So it's looking for that remember me token for my bank or my work email?
Exactly. It scrapes your browser for saved passwords, session cookies, logins. It wants to steal your identity. And the reason this matters to business leaders is that those 26,000 devices aren't just personal toys.
They're the laptops people use to remote into work.
Exactly. They're phones that access company email. The perimeter has completely dissolved. If your employee's home PC gets infected because their kid downloaded a cracked video game,
the corporate network might be compromised. Wow. And you'd think with all this sophisticated malware, that's where the money is being lost. But looking at the stats in this bulletin, the real financial damage is, well, it's frustratingly simple.
It is so frustrating. The Q3 2025 report showed direct financial losses doubled to NZ $12.4 million. But the main driver wasn't Luma Stealer. It was business email compromise. BEC.
So tricking someone into paying a fake invoice.
Social engineering. Pure and simple. We spend millions on firewalls and AI, but the biggest losses come from someone in accounts payable, getting an email that says, hey, we changed banks and the money here, and they just do it.
It proves you can patch a server, but it's a lot harder to patch a human's tendency to trust an official-looking email.
Exactly.
Which is a perfect segue into the human element, because there's a BNZ survey in here about small and medium enterprises, SMEs, that reveals this crazy psychological paradox.
Oh, the SME blind spot? This is fascinating. The survey found that 53% of business owners felt prepared for scams.
Okay, that sounds pretty good.
It sounds good, but you should be skeptical, because nearly half of that confident group, they still engaged with a scam attempt shortly after.
Wait, so they said, I know what I'm doing, and then they immediately went and clicked the bad link?
Pretty much, yeah. About half of SMEs were targeted last year, losing around $5,000 an incident. But the scary part is the mindset. 45% don't see cyber education as a priority, even while 64% admit scam activity is going up.
That makes no sense. They see the threat, they're losing money, they think they're ready, but they fail the test. What is going on?
It's a kind of Dunning-Kruger effect for cyber. It's this false sense of security. I'm smart, I run a business, I won't get tricked. But the scammers have evolved. They're not sending emails with typos anymore.
Right.
It's cold calls, bank impersonation, really convincing invoice scams. If you're not constantly learning, your confidence is actually a liability.
It's like people who say they're good drivers while they're texting.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of getting hit hard, we have to look across the ditch. The situation in Australia seems way more aggressive.
It is a different world over there right now. Mm-hmm. According to a Rubrik Zero Labs report from December, Australia has basically become the ransomware capital of the region.
How bad are we talking?
Australian organizations reported the highest proportion of ransomware attacks globally. Nearly 35% of all their cyber attacks involved ransomware or extortion.
35%? That's astronomically high. Why there?
It's a mix of things, but partly because it pays. The report says almost all the victims paid the ransom.
Which just feeds the beast.
It does. And the tactic has changed. It's not just, we encrypted your files, pay up. It's double extortion. It's, we stole your data, and if you don't pay, we leak it.
Which puts executives in an impossible position. Backups can restore your systems, but they can't stop a criminal from posting your customer database on the dark web.
Exactly. And this all ties back to that supply chain risk we talked about. We see Australia is looking at compelling rapid disclosure from third parties. If you're a vendor holding government data and you get breached,
you can't just hide it and fix it quietly.
No. You'd be legally forced to tell the government immediately. The days of sweeping a breach under the rug are ending.
Okay, we've covered a lot of scary ground. Government inquiries, malware, ransomware. I imagine if you're listening, you're feeling a bit overwhelmed. But the bulletin pivots here. It moves from the news to this editorial section, and this is where we get the solution.
This is really the core philosophy. The editorial lays out a new standard, and the key quote that just summarizes everything is, minimum does not mean easy. It means expected.
Minimum does not mean easy. I like that. It implies the baseline has been raised so high that just reaching it is hard work.
It is hard work.
Yeah.
But it's non-negotiable. The bulletin argues that security maturity is now a baseline expectation. If you can't quickly spot abnormal behavior or make timely decisions, you're already behind. You're negligent.
And they define unprepared in a really interesting way. It's not just about having bad software.
No, it's a failure of response. When a breach goes public, the world doesn't just judge you on the hack. People get that hackers exist. They judge you on the speed, clarity, and confidence of your response.
That's the difference between a PR disaster and a managed crisis. It's, we don't know what happened versus, we've isolated the issue and here's our plan.
Precisely. And the bulletin is crystal clear on this. Incident response is no longer just an IT responsibility. It is a leadership obligation. Preparedness isn't some document on a server. It's a capability. It's muscle memory.
So how do you build that muscle memory? The bulletin outlines this. What is it? A 4-step playbook for preparedness? This feels like the masterclass portion of our deep dive. So, step one, incident response planning. But they add a key phrase, fit for purpose.
That phrase is doing a lot of heavy lifting. I mean, most places have a plan. It's a 50-page PDF that hasn't been touched since 2023. That is not fit for purpose.
Right. If the first time you look at the plan is when the attack is happening, it's already too late.
It's way too late. A fit for purpose plan is your pre-agreed operating model for crisis conditions. It has to answer the hard questions beforehand. Who has the authority to shut down the e-commerce site? Who talks to the press? Who calls the insurers? If you're debating who's in charge during the attack, you've already lost.
Establish the hierarchy before the chaos. Okay, Step two, tabletop simulations. This actually sounds kind of fun.
It is, but it's a very stressful kind of fun. The goal is to test decision-making, not documentation. You get the real executives in a room, the CEO, CFO, legal, HR, comms, not just IT, and you hit them with a scenario.
Like what?
Ransomware has hit. They want $5 million. The press is on the phone. Customers are tweeting that their data is for sale. You have 30 minutes. Go.
I imagine for a lot of leaders, that's the first time they realize they do not have the answer.
100%. It reveals the gaps instantly. You find out your general counsel has no idea if your insurance even covers ransomware, or the comms director doesn't have the password to the emergency Twitter account. You want to find those failures in a simulation, not on a Tuesday morning when your stock is tanking.
Test the people, not just the systems. Okay, step three, post-incident review. This feels like the part everyone skips because they just want it to be over.
It's the most skipped step and the most dangerous one to skip. Everyone treats the end of the incident as the finish line. Phew, we survived. But it has to be a transition point. If you don't lock in those learnings, you are doomed to repeat the same incident.
It's about building institutional memory.
Yes. A proper review creates a timeline. It identifies root causes, not just symptoms. It asks, why did this happen? And more importantly, why did it take us 4 hours to even notice? Without that, you're not prepared for the next one. You're just a sitting duck.
Okay, and finally, step four. This one's practical, but I can see it getting pushed back because it costs money. The incident response retainer.
This is the insurance policy you hope you never use. A retainer means you have a specialist forensic firm on speed dial.
Okay, play devil's advocate. Why can't I just Google a cyber firm when the hack happens? Why pay for a retainer?
Okay, picture it. It's 2 a.m. on a Saturday. Your systems are down. You're panicking. You call a firm. They don't know you. They say, okay, we need to run a conflict check. That takes a day. Then they send over a contract. Your legal team needs to review it. That's another day.
And all that time, the hackers are still in your network.
Exactly. You are burning the golden hour of response on paperwork. A retainer isn't about the fee. It's about pre-clearing all that red tape. The contract is signed, the conflict check is done, you hit a button, and the cavalry arrives.
You don't want to be negotiating the price of a fire hose while your house is burning down.
That's the perfect way to put it. It offers certainty of response. And in a crisis, certainty is the most valuable currency you have.
So, to recap the masterclass, plan the governance, test the executives, review your failures, and keep the experts on retainer.
That's the formula. It takes discipline, it takes budget, but compared to the cost of a botched response, it's cheap.
Now, before we wrap, there was one tiny technical note in here we shouldn't ignore. It was about Fortinet vulnerabilities.
Yes, a brief but necessary reality check. Active exploitation of Fortinet vulnerabilities. It's just a reminder that while we're talking about all this high-level strategy, the technical threats never sleep. The foundation is still basic cyber hygiene.
Right. You can have the best plan in the world, but if you don't patch your router, you're still going to get hit.
Exactly right.
So, bringing this all together, we started by saying the ground has shifted. We've looked at the inquiries, the malware, the playbook. What's the final takeaway for everyone listening today?
The era of it's an IP problem is over. Just look at the government scrutiny, the new standards. The entire environment has changed.
And the cost of being unprepared isn't just a number on a spreadsheet anymore. It's your reputation. It's your job.
Right. And I want to leave you with the bulletin's final challenge. I think it's the most provocative question a leader can ask right now. The question isn't if an incident will occur. We know it will. The question is, will your organization be ready to respond when it does? Are you confident, truly confident, that your leadership team knows their role before the crisis hits?
That is the question to ask at your next board meeting. Don't wait for the breach to find out the answer. That's it for this deep dive. Check your plans, run a simulation, and we'll see you next time. Stay safe.
Goodbye.